24, 25 years, I guess. And I said, well, it is sometimes. And they said, what do you mean sometimes? And I said, well, sometimes when I'm traveling, I get to meet cool, really super people that are kind of lockstep with the big book and lockstep with the solution and this kind of, and sometimes though, I get to meet people that don't have one clue what's in the basic text. And so those are not very fun. And I've traveled all over the world talking to some of those guys, and some of them are real fun. And some of them are just like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, Myers. I can relate. I'm never judging it. I can always relate to where they're coming from because I spent 7 years in AA, and I never cracked the book, and I had a sponsor in name only, and y'all get that. It was just kind of a crazy deal. But so, when you start looking at the steps, it's always kind of fascinating. I remember a gal called me one time, and she had they were trying to start a book study. And she asked me if I would help. And I said, yes. And she said, let me send you some emails so you can see kind of what we're up against. And so she sent me a couple of emails, and they were just a thread from some other members that were dead set against the book study, and they didn't want to do that. And the quotes were like, if the program shouldn't be about the big book, it shouldn't be about the steps, it should be about fellowship and this stuff. And I understand where they were coming from, but they were kind of pushing something uphill there. They just couldn't seem to get anything off the ground. The reason I'm telling you this, guys, is because one of the most fascinating things that will happen to you, it happened to me, it'll happen to most of y'all over a period of time, is that you'll find yourself in a situation, and some of you can already relate to this, you'll find yourself in a situation where you start to learn things about the book that you didn't know, and you've been in the rooms for a good bit of time. And so it's really fun. I mean, it's to connect up the dots and to see things happening that you didn't quite understand. But one of the things that kind of blew me away was that there were real directions for how to work this work. And which just was kind of mind numbing. I mean, it was just like, it just kind of blew me away because I'd been taught exactly the opposite. That it's just some suggestions, and you can take what you want, you can leave the rest, and you know they always likened it to a cafeteria. You just take what you want, you know, this kind of. And I'm just going, and I didn't know better because I'd never read any of it. When I finally fell in with a bunch of big book guys at about 7 years sober, and those rascals saved my life, and I just stayed with them. Primary Purpose Group Dallas is my home group now for 25 years since I've been over there. And it's been an amazing sort of a deal. And so we study and restudy and study and restudy. And it's stayed fun. It's never gotten old or weird. And I kind of dig that. There was a guy, I want to tell you a real quick story, and then I'll get into the step stuff. We're talking about step 6 and 7 tonight. There was a guy named Don that was Chris's, the evil twin. It was Chris's first sponsor. And Don was a regular member of our group there where I sobered up in north of Dallas. It wasn't in Dallas. And he was always there. Every meeting he was there. And one day he didn't show up. And the next day he didn't show up. And the next day he didn't. And then the third or fourth day he showed up. And I said, hey, where you been? And he said, therapy. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, I'll tell you in the meeting. And so we weren't about to study the big book there. They were a bunch of really nice people, but we didn't study the text. We talked about people's trips to a therapist and, you know, all this stuff. Fun stuff, but not book stuff. And so he said, I'll talk about it in the meeting. And so when he got in there, I said, so tell me what happened. And he said, well, it's interesting, Myers. He said, I took tests for 2.5 days. I took tests. And then at the end of 2.5 days, they came in and I sat with a therapist, and the therapist said, well, Don, you're going to be kind of surprised. And Don said, tell me. And Don was expecting some great big news about the testing that he'd done. And they said, well, it looks to me like you're a perfectly well-adjusted adolescent. And Don was like 48 years old at the time. And we kind of, chuckled a little bit, but I didn't really get it until much later, thinking back at the story, and I went, God, I totally get that kind of stuff. So stick with me. How many of y'all have ever gotten sober and then read the little part over on page 60, 61, and 62, the little part where it talks about selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problems? I mean, you know, and I'm going, nuh-uh, Bill Wilson's an idiot. I mean, I'm just telling you. Canadian whiskey and methamphetamines is the root of my problem. Seriously. I mean, if I can get rid of the whiskey, I'm going to be okay. Well, I did. I got rid of it. And then 6 years later, I'm suicidal, ready to be institutionalized because I can't get rid of the depression. My wife doesn't like me. My kids are scared of me. And y'all get the picture. I'm doing all kinds of weird things. And here's the point. All of a sudden, it occurred to me that maybe Bill Wilson in the first 100, maybe they knew what they were talking about. Maybe they were onto something when they talked about this thing called selfishness and self-centeredness. So here's the deal. Years later, Bill Wilson kind of joined at the hip with Harry Thiebaud, his psychiatrist, would write a bunch of stuff about emotional sobriety, and they would talk about the bigger picture of what it looks like. Yeah, I don't care who you are. If you drew a sober breath and you're in AA, you stand at the same place that all of us stand, where we get to make a decision whether or not we want to be sober one day at a time. Is that enough just to be sober today? Or is there more? The book talks about recovery. It says recovered on page 90. It asks us to introduce ourselves that way as recovered. That's the reason I do. It still drives people crazy. But here's the point. We get to make the decision. If just getting up this morning and being sober today is enough, then rock on. Just do that. But I think what's going to happen is that most of you, and men and women are exactly the same here. You will see exactly the same thing. Most of us will run down range a little bit, and then we'll begin to sense that we are not really all we're supposed to be. And sometimes we will be told by other people, you're a childish little kid. And you go, no, not me. I'm not childish. Now, remind you, at this point, I haven't really done an inventory, or if I did, it was superficial in nature. The Bill Wilson starting at the ABCs on 60 kicks a door open that we get to choose whether we continue to walk on in and look around, or whether we close the door and walk back out again. And I'm not here to judge anybody. I'm the poster boy for closing the door again. I'm telling you, I didn't want to look at any of this stuff. I didn't want to look at it because there was a piece of me deep down inside that suspected that I'm not going to like what I see. Remember that little piece in the book where it talks about a solitary self-appraisal is seldom sufficient? Given a chance to just sit on my bunk and look at the ceiling and go, well, you know, and let me talk to myself a little bit, and I'll do what a lot of y'all will do too, is you'll talk yourself out of looking at anything really seriously, and you'll just convince yourself that you're really not a bad guy anyway. I'm a pretty cool dude. And what you're doing is you're just sort of living this stage character that Bill's talking about on this kind of stuff. I always think it's fascinating. All of this, I promise you, Scout's Honor, with both hands, Scout's Honor, I'm going to connect all this in just a minute, and we're going to start talking about 6 and 7. But it's important to understand that in looking at the bigger picture of this thing, first you have to look at the stuff that you guys talked about last week, which was this inventory. You're going to have to look at it and actually address this stuff. And your inventory will be superficial and a 5-hour beating for the sponsor that's listening to it, or it'll be quick and to the point, concise, and you will see things that hurt your feelings. You will see things that will make you feel uncomfortable. And that was the whole purpose of this whole thing. The whole purpose was to get us into a position to where we could look at who we really, really are. So let me ask you this just sort of rhetorically. I mean, this, how many of you have ever got downrange and then realized that you didn't really like who you were as you sat in meetings or as you dealt with life and this kind of stuff? One of the old talks that Don Pritz did, my kind of an iconic guy out in Denver, one of the things that he used to talk about that used to blow me away, he would say, at some point in time, and I'm not sure when, this was his conversation, and he said, I'm not sure when, we stopped talking about recovery and settled on sobriety. And that was a game changer for me when I finally recognized it. When I first heard it, it didn't mean anything. But later I went and connected it up and I went, you know, he's right. He's right. I need to figure this one out and see. There's more than just staying sober one day at a time. There's more and you'll sense it. And I don't know when that will be. I mean, cause for the first 3 or 4 years I was sober, everything was groovy. Everything was fine. And then it wasn't. And then I began to fall apart. And so some of you will see that. Now, listen, if it doesn't happen to you right off the bat, it will happen to the men and the women that you sponsor. You'll see it. You'll see it often. That's the reason why this stuff gets so amazingly important that we look at it. So let's talk about the specific parts of this stuff and see. We're gonna do this inventory. And then we get done with this inventory like that. And let me just mention, one of the funnest things that I've ever done in AA is start asking questions with new men that I start sponsoring. And I ask them, tell me what your 4-step was like. Can you just tell me, oh yeah, it was a beating. It took me 5 or 6 hours to get through or whatever. And I'm going, what I'm looking for is more the specific stuff with it like that. When you did your inventory, regardless of how long it took, tell me what your 4th column looked like. Now, guys, I've had this conversation with hundreds of people over the years. And believe me, it is unbelievable how many men would look at me and go, 4th column? I'm not sure I understand. I said, oh, really? So tell me what your inventory looked like. Well, it was my life story. We see a lot of guys coming out of treatment where that's what they'll ask them to do. Write me your life story. Well, guys, listen, if I'm going to write you a life story, I'm going to write you a life story and I'm going to paint a picture of me as a victim every opportunity I can. And I'm going to paint me as this kind of or a saint or a whatever. I mean, like this, I'm not going to be straight with you about this kind of stuff. I'm not going to look at this is the reason that 4th column is so amazingly powerful. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Now, guys, that's a load. I mean, that's some tall stuff. And if you can work with a sponsor who will help you see that when you get done with it, regardless of how long it takes to do it, you will find that you will be somewhat crushed by the reality of what you see. Most men that I've worked with will find themselves they'll be a bit overjoyed that they got it done. But past that, they're going to be looking really, really hard at the big picture. And I'm going to circle back and help them see the truth. So Hoss, let me see if you got this right. I want to make sure that you're clear on this thing. During the course of this hour and a half that we've been doing this inventory, we saw that you're selfish and self-centered. We thought you see that you're dishonest. There's pride involved, how other people see you. Look at how many decisions you made based on that. You see what I'm saying? There's a whole bunch of this stuff that all comes together. Well, if we left you there, right there, you'd be devastated. Now I get to walk out with my head looking at the ground, devastated by the fact that I have been an absolute walking hypocrite all these years. I'm telling myself every morning that I'm the badass. I'm the man looking in the mirror like this. And the reality of it is, guys, is that I'm a bit shady and I got a lot of dishonesty and I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. Can I get an amen? Anybody testify? Anybody been there like that? This is the stuff that gets us like this. And Bill, this is the reason I think Bill was such a brilliant, that whole gathering of folks that wrote this thing, they were brilliant because they knew that and they understood that. You're getting ready to walk out of here and you're going to move towards something that's called an amends process. Well, if you have no clarity about your character defects, how willing are you going to be to make these amends? Not very. You'll still be in deflect mode, and you'll still be doing everything you can to rationalize all of your behavior. Any of y'all ever done that, where you'll try to justify goofy stuff? I mean, somebody will say something about what you did, and you'll figure out some way to justify it or rationalize it like that, and it's just like... And it's embarrassing too. I mean, if you look back at it really, and the things that you try to rationalize, it's just flat embarrassing. But we do that. I mean, we're completely complicit with the program. And Bill Wilson knew that. And so this is the reason it got so cool. So let's look at this thing. It says on the bottom of page 75, and it, just as a from a sponsorship standpoint, y'all don't have to follow this like this, but I asked the guys, the men that I'm sponsoring, after we've done inventory, I asked them to go find someplace quiet and do this as quickly as they can, to don't put it off. And the reason I don't want them to put it off is because your ego will work overtime to make sure that you don't deal with it. Cause your ego wants you comfortable. And so this stuff is going to make you uncomfortable. And so let's get on with it get on into the miracle part of this thing. At the bottom of page 75 and top of page 76, I'm just going to read this. If you got a book, you can read along, or I'm just going to read it here. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. It's important. Not 10 minutes, not an hour. Carefully reviewing what we've done, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the pages which contain the 12 steps. Back over on 59 and 60, you're going to look at those. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we're building an arch through which we will walk a free man at last. So they're asking you to look at the first five steps that you've done. And then you're going to ask some specifics. Is our work solid so far? Well, how do you know? Well, we'll talk about it. It's important to understand. We looked one night at a book study. We looked up the word solid. I thought they were wasting time, but when it came back, I laughed because it really made sense. Solid means not hollow or containing gaps. It couldn't be any sweeter, couldn't be any better for what we're doing on this stuff like that. Is our work solid so far? They're going to ask these four questions on here, like, is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? And have we tried to make mortar without sand? We were trying to figure out the other day why Bill Wilson kept coming up with these masonry metaphors in all of this. I think it was his grandfather, but I couldn't prove it. But somebody at a conference one time had said that his grandfather was dealing with a bunch of masonry stuff, was in the industry, in the business, and that's where a lot of this stuff came from. But Bill uses it a lot when he's writing on this stuff. So there are two stones that they're talking about. Are the stones properly in place? There's a stone in step two and there's a stone in step three, and I'm going to read them just because I want you to be sure that you see them and you can mark them on your thing. The first one is on page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there's a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. That cornerstone is the main piece of rock that's put at the corner of a building that anchors everything that runs down one wall and down the other wall like that. Without a cornerstone in place, you're going to have you a mess. It'll manifest down the wall, but at some point in time, it's going to manifest. And see, this was all step two stuff. And they were asking this primarily, were you willing to bleed? Notice it didn't say like this, that you had to have a fully formed idea. Because a lot of this work is done pretty quick, guys. Step one, step two, and step three. I've done hundreds and hundreds of work with men where we were done with one, two, and three and got into the inventory stuff within the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks that they were sober. And they're still kind of scratching their head around this God idea, but they're willing 100% in. I'm willing to do that, to move that direction. Willingness is really key on this whole thing. It's truly too important to miss. The other part of this thing is on page 62, this third step, little piece of rock that we're going to deal with. Back over on 62, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Well, most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we would pass to freedom. This keystone, you've seen that stuff. This keystone is that little piece at the very top of an archway like this. It's usually shaped differently than the other pieces of rock that are in that deal. But the entire weight of the arch is on that keystone. And so what Bill Wilson is saying is there's no reason here to keep moving on if you find in reflection that you have big gaps in your understanding of step two. If you were dishonest, and this happens, it'll come up sometimes. Or in step three stuff, you're gonna be in real trouble. Both of these steps, two and three, are where we get the power necessary to do the things that we're gonna do. You're just simply not going to. Well, let me ask you a question. How many of y'all have ever done an inventory with a guy or a gal that you're sponsoring that had not had an effective second experience or third experience, third step experience? If you've never done it, it's truly laughable. Let me tell you one of the ways that you'll tell right away if the inventory that you just listened to, if these guys are struggling with this, because people will say, Myers, I just didn't have an experience with step four. And I'm going, tell me what you think about that. And they'll tell me about it. And they'll say, I don't understand why I didn't have the experience. And always you go back to this little piece right here and look at step two and look at step three. The dead last thing that you want in the middle of any of this is self slugging through this, trying to make this happen. And the way that you know that you've got a guy like that on the reins that you're working with is that he tries to justify everything. Is it normal for us to try to justify at the beginning of this? Yeah, we'll justify and rationalize it. But at some point early on, they're going to go, okay, well, I see it. I get it. But some guys will, to the bitter end, justify their behavior. It's like you're dealing with some guy that's steeped in some kind of weird-ass narcissistic syndrome, and he's trying to deal with this stuff. It's tough, and it's the most uncomfortable hours you'll ever spend talking to another man because he's just tenaciously connected to the idea that this was all about them. And this had nothing to do with me. And I'm sponsoring about five guys like that right now. And I'm telling you, it'll make you sweat. Truly. And so we want to be done with that stuff. Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? All of these back to those building metaphors. It was all back to that same kind of thing. If you skimp on the cement, it's going to be the same thing. He's trying to get us to understand. We used to do years ago, this is probably 20 years ago, there were some places in Dallas that we were carrying the message, and they would let us go in and do these workshops. And they were fun. And somebody said, hey, let's do third step workshops together, and then we'll have everybody get on their knees, and we'll do the third step prayer together. And we thought, okay, we'll give it a try and do it. Let me tell you, it proved to be a bit of a disaster. It was fun at the time, but let me tell you what happened. There were always men in the room. This was at a Salvation Army, and it was just men that we were working with. We would always find ourselves in a situation where there'd be three or four men that felt enough peer pressure. We got 100 guys in the room, and they didn't want to be the only guys that weren't getting on their knees. And so they hit their knees, said the prayer, but didn't believe it. They didn't believe it. This is the reason why I'm always, there are steps that I'll do with other people around, but this third step is so huge that I don't want anybody to feel pressured. This has to come from your side of the equation. And we don't want to do it. So I stopped doing that. And what we found out was that we would, in the weeks that followed this, we were doing inventories with all of these men. And we kept finding these guys that were devastated. They were just like, they didn't get any of it. And you realize that there's no God anywhere in the middle of this stuff. And most of y'all have done that. Most of y'all have been around long enough where you've seen that kind of situation. Inventory where we're moving towards this miraculous experience with our Creator. If God is in the picture, this is pretty easy stuff. It's pretty fun. If God is not in it, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm dying here trying to get you. It's like all of a sudden I realize I'm doing all the lifting, all the pushing, all the work. I'm doing everything, and you're just kind of hanging on there. And it's just like, come on, we don't want to do that. I want to read something just a second on this thing. At the end of that little place on 75, it said, have we skimped on the cement, put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? There's a point in there where you probably need to ask them, are we omitting something, or are we forgetting something? How many of y'all have ever done an inventory and you just forgot something? It happens all the time. And all of a sudden later I'll go, oh golly, there was that night with the collie dogs or something. I mean, you'll all of a sudden just remember something like that, and you'll go like, oh, I remember that. Well, but there's a difference between forgetting something and omitting something. How many of y'all have ever worked in a situation where you were sponsoring somebody and they intentionally omitted telling you about something? And then later it comes out. Yeah. Yeah. It's problematic. It'll screw up the whole deal. And so they get us to the top of page 76. And this is where it was either Ed Dowling, Father Dowling, or can't think of the other guy's name. One of those priests that were working with Bill at the time was the guy that said that this step six was what separated the men from the boys. And it's truly life-changing. But I'm here to testify. I'm blown away by how many men I've worked with over the years that I got in after they had been in the program for a while and had never, ever done this, have never done it. They treated the inventory like it was confessional. I'm just going to go confess. And there is a confessional quality to the inventory. I understand that. But that's not what we're trying to do. What we're trying to do is see who we really are authentically. Are we the real deal guy that cares about his character? Or are we the stage character that Bill Wilson's talking about? And that's why the inventory is so cool, because I get to see resentment at a time. I get to see whether or not I'm bona fide, whether I'm real, or whether I'm the stage character. And so this is huge, huge, huge. We see this stuff all of the time. Those promises at the end of the fifth step are, there's a paragraph full of promises there that freak me out. They're so amazing. That's the life that I want. That's the motivation. It wasn't to get this stuff off my chest. That wasn't it. When I read those promises and I thought, this is otherworldly stuff. This is like game-changing stuff. And if I want that, what do I got to do? And so that was my motivation to go ahead and go through the rest of this stuff. So look at the top of page 76. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step six. We've emphasized willingness as being indispensable. There's a willingness thing again. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all of the things which we have admitted are objectionable? That's a fine piece there. And then it continues, can he now take them all, every one? And then Bill Wilson, in his absolute unreal wisdom, if we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. I mean, guys, you would think that once we saw that we're a turd in the punch bowl, that we would want to get rid of it, that we would want to do something different, but we don't. Some of us will hang. I cannot tell you how many men I've met over the years that had a girlfriend on the side in a relationship, and they weren't ready to get rid of the girl. I want everything to be back to normal with my wife, but I'm not ready to let go of Zelda. Damn. This is the stuff that they're talking about. This is what they're giving you a little way to deal with that kind of stuff. But look at the key part, and we'll talk about it for just a second, and then we'll move on. I love the fact that we've got two paragraphs, one paragraph for step six, one paragraph for step seven, and that's it. If you go back and look in the 12 and 12, have y'all ever counted how many pages are in the 12 and 12 around it? Yeah, you have 7 pages for step six and 7 pages for step seven. They really expanded it. Some of it's good reading, some of it's fun reading, but I really like the simplicity of this. In the center of step six, look at the line. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all of the things which we have what? Admitted or objectionable? Listen, in the middle of my addiction, dishonesty is not objectionable. Selfishness and self-centeredness is not objectionable. This is survival stuff. This is what I do in order to survive. So it's like I will rationalize a lot of that stuff. But on the other side, on this side of an inventory, when I've had somebody pointing this out, resentment after resentment after resentment, when I get to see that because of the decisions that I made, and the absolute necessity of having you do the things that I want you to do the way I want you to do it like this, then all of a sudden I realize that, wait a minute, I'm not a victim here. I'm a willing participant in the crazy drama that is my life. Sometimes it won't be quite that clear. Sometimes it'll take a little bit to get the clarity, but it'll come and you will see that. But you're going to look at the things that we've admitted are objectionable and then and then get rid of them. One of the things on my stuff that caught me completely off guard was pride. Clifford, Krusty Cliff, this old guy that sponsored me at the time like that, he was probably, I don't know, 75, I guess, when we were doing this inventory. And he said, Myers, are you prideful? And I went, no. Because I'm thinking pride means, do I look in the mirror? Well, no, I don't spend any time in the morning. You know, I'm looking at it that's what he's talking about. That's not what pride is. Pride is, it by definition, how other people see us. And so when you say it like that, now I had to go back and look at this. Myers, in a given day, do you care what other people think about you? Not yes, but hell yes. You bet I do. And I've talked to a lot of people that go, well, not necessarily. And I'm going, oh, really? So you've never made decisions based on how you want other people to perceive you? Well, let me ask you a question. How many times at a group conscious meeting did you look around the room to see how everybody else was voting, and then you voted with them because you don't want to stir anything up? You don't. Guys, I was so embarrassed when I began to realize what a absolutely pitiful phony I was. I mean, I'm as inauthentic as anybody could be. I'm amazed that my wife didn't kick me to the curb. We've been married almost 40 years, and I am so amazed that she didn't just trash my ass and get rid of me because I was such a phony. I just played games all the time with this stuff, and I didn't realize it until we got into this inventory and this stuff. And so I'm looking at some of this stuff. Was that objectionable? Yeah, I want the pride to go away. Was I selfish and self-centeredness? Selfish and self-centered, yeah. Let me ask you something. How many of y'all recognize offhand how to tell if selfishness plays a role. Let me tell you the easiest way that has ever been explained to me, but it makes sense. If you're not sure in a relationship or in any situation, if you're not sure that selfishness played a role, ask yourself this question. If this person had done what I wanted him to do the way I wanted him to do it, would I still be upset with him? Well, of course not. Of course not. I mean, why would I be upset with them if they did what I wanted them to do? And then all of a sudden you'll go, oh, crap. It and then you realize all of a sudden you'll start seeing it and you'll go, God, I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. Now, that's why Bill Wilson said what he did. Selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem. But I'm fighting it tooth and nail because I don't want to admit. It's funny, in the irony of that, I don't mind admitting that I'm a drunk, that I'm a crazy ass dope fiend. I don't mind admitting all this kind of stuff, but I am devastated that I have to admit that I'm selfish and self-centered and prideful. Oh my gosh, I'm embarrassed even thinking about it. But this is the stuff that we're talking about. This is the good stuff that we get to bring into this inventory, into this step 6 and 7. And then we get to decide. It's that old Mark Houston, how free do you want to be stuff. That's where we are. How free do you want to be? If you don't want to be free, don't do it. That's up to you. But if you want to know what real freedom is like that, it's like, guys, how do you change what you can't see? So my new little buddy, Philip, if you're okay with being full of crap, then why would you want to change it? If it still works for you, then just leave it alone. But what happens if you went through the inventory and you realized item after item after item that you were a bit of a pain in the butt, that you cause problems like this, but you realize who you really are. Guys, let me tell you something. There's nothing sweeter and nothing goofier than to find out who you really are. Sometimes it just flat hurts. You mean, could I really be that way? And the reality is, yeah, I can, but you have to be able to identify it first. If you're going to ask God to remove it, because otherwise, guys, we could just go into step 6 and we could go, God, I just want to be a better man. And I don't know. I mean, God's a big God. I get that. But I'm thinking, from my perspective these days, I'm thinking God's sitting there kind of scratching his old beard and he's going, what the hell does that mean, Myers? What do you mean a better man? Wouldn't it be better if you could go to your creator and say, well, I'd like you to remove the things that I now see are objectionable. Before, I didn't see that I was selfish and self-centered, and now that I do, I'm prideful, I'm dishonest, I'm fearful. These are the things that we're asking God to remove. And it is an amazing thing. Once you see it, the problem always is not seeing it. If you don't see it, you're always going to be stumped and you're always going to be tripped up. But if you're clear what the problem is, and then you can ask God to remove that. Am I the only guy that has a big old stack of self-help books by your bed at one point in time? I'd look over there and it'd be like 20 book, big book, Bill, I love you already, buddy. Cause it's just like, I love you already. I bet I had a shelf full. I mean, I don't know. I bet I had 40 books over there, everything from think and grow rich or whatever. I'm just going to think my way through the whole thing and make this all happen. And I'm just going to grab this old thing by the bootstraps and make it. Joe McQuaney, if you ever get a chance to go back and listen to some old Joe McQuaney stuff, Joe sponsored Clifford, who was my sponsor for 20 some odd years. And that's Joe and Charlie, guys, that did those talks in the late 60s and 70s and 80s. And Joe McQuaney said one time, we were having coffee with him, and he said, do you think you can overcome self by just exerting more self? And I looked at Joe, and I don't know if you ever saw pictures of Joe or if you ever saw him in person, but he's really big. I mean, he's good. He's got it. When I shook hands with Joe, it was like I was shaking hands with somebody that had a baseball glove on. He had enormous hands like this, and he was just like, you know, like, and he goes, do you really think that you could overcome self by exerting more self? And I went, Yeah, absolutely. Clifford, my sponsor, was sitting at the same table like this, and Clifford just rolled his eyes and said, "See, Joe, I told you he was a pain in the ass." And Joe laughed and Clifford laughed, and I'm just sitting there with my arms folded. I didn't think it was funny at all. But the reality of it was, Joe said, "Myers, you will never, ever, ever overcome self by trying to exert more self. You will never make that happen." And I believed him. And there was plenty of motivation to go on. The only way you're going to change self is spiritually on a level that is completely hard to describe. You're just simply, as your relationship with your creator deepens, you will find that the things that used to just drive you crazy will go away, will be gone. Whether it's sex, whether it's whatever, like, guys, I've watched hundreds and hundreds of people in AA get clear of the addiction, live their life for a little while, and then get tripped up in something else. Gambling, food. I've sponsored a dozen men who are now members and doing fine in OA because they couldn't push back from Bluebell ice cream every night. I mean, it's just like, we're going to scratch an itch one way or the other. And if I'm restless, irritable, and discontent, I'll either scratch it with a spiritual solution, which is the steps in this program that's spiritual in nature, or we're going to scratch it with something else. Sex. I mean, I've had dozens of guys where their families were destroyed by sex like that. It's a big thing. This is how we deal with it like this. Let me wrap this up real quick. We get down to the end of this. The step says that we humbly ask. Humility is huge on this. When ready, we say something like this: "My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen." A lot of people will connect that up as the amen that was not on the end of the third step prayer. I think it's just a nice little piece to note how the prayer sets up. And then we've completed step seven. Of real interest to me, and it was fascinating. You reckon that there's something goofy about you that God could use even when you're goofy? It happens. It happens. And sometimes we don't see that kind of stuff. Let me give you a quick example of this stuff and then we'll move on. If any of y'all ever heard the evil twin, Chris, do talks about 18 years ago, every other word was an F-bomb. And he would make you, I mean, you just go, "Oh my gosh," like this. And I kept thinking, come on, Mark. I mean, Chris, you're offending people out there, this kind of stuff. About 12 years ago, Chris prayed about it and asked God to remove it if it was objectionable, and God removed it. And I haven't heard Chris say a cuss word in a talk since then. I haven't heard him say one word. And so somebody said, "Well, I don't understand what that's got to do with anything." I bet I've had over the years, especially dealing with a lot of European kids that we've dealt with over the years, guys from Iceland and a lot of cool places like this, but I bet I've had 50 young men that Philip's age that would come up and say, "You know, I got to tell you, if Chris hadn't talked the way he talked when he did, I never would have got sober. I wasn't about to listen to the rest of those guys like this. But when Chris came in and called me a mopo, I listened to him. I mean, it got my attention. And so for whatever reason," you see what I'm saying? So God would, at some point in time, God would say, "Okay, enough. But it's time to get rid of that." I think it's important to understand God will take the defects out of the way. But if it's something that can be a benefit to him, you may be surprised. It doesn't go away overnight, but it will. Let me connect up a couple of dots. I've got just like 4 minutes, 5 minutes here to do this. At the other side of this, y'all, we get done with step six and seven. And Mr. Jared Dickey, one of my favorites, is going to be on with y'all next Wednesday, I think, to do steps 8 and 9. And let me ask you this question sort of rhetorically. I hit on it earlier and we talked about it just a little bit, but I want to double back based on what we've been talking about. How effective do you think we would be if we had not done this work, this inventory, and then 6 and 7, and then looked at these character defects and looked at all of the things that were going on? How effective do you think we would be at the amends process? I think what we're looking at, guys, is an absolute complete train wreck of a situation. If we walk back into the amends process, so let's say I owe Big Book Bill an amends like this, and it's the old Myers that's going to make the amends. I'm going to approach him and I'm going to say, hey, Bill, listen, I want to tell you, buddy, I'm real sorry for doing what I did. But really, dude, if you hadn't done what you did, I never would have done what I did like that. And you'll see how goofy that is. That sucks. I mean, that's just – that would be – but the old Myers would do that because the old Myers is still trying to do whatever he can to support and prop up his old way of doing things like this. What I want to do is when I talk to Bill, I want to walk up to him a man that is steeped in humility, because I realize that I am indeed a train wreck and that I really, really am regretting the things that I did. And then I could walk up and own the mistakes that I made. In our relationship, there were things that I regretted. And one of those that was that I ignored you or whatever the thing happens to be. But I don't have to be involved in trying to support the old guy anymore. Because as we get healthier, most of y'all will notice this, as you get healthier, your ego begins to die. And you find yourself in a situation where you're not trying to defend and make yourself feel better. You're willing to own the wreckage of your past and then do whatever we can to fix it. But again, it's important that you understand all of this is impossible if you don't see your truth, if you don't see it and understand. And you will know by the time you get through this inventory thing, you will know that for sure. And then you'll be okay. One more little piece on here that I want to just kind of connect up a couple of dots. In the old days, before I understood the basic text, I never did an inventory that in less than 5 hours. And I did a couple of them that went 5 hours one day and 4 hours the next day. They were freaking nightmares for them and for me. All I did was just sit there. And what I began to realize was that and what really helped more than anything was talking to a bunch of archivists, a bunch of history nerds at some of these conferences, and they would talk about how they did these inventories in the old days. And I said, is there any evidence how long it took or how long it took to do those inventories? He said, oh yeah, 45 minutes to an hour. And I'm going, wait, that's impossible. And I remember this one guy, he said, Myers, the only reason that those inventories are taking you so long is because you're sitting there letting that guy justify his bad behavior for 5 hours. Tell him to hush and help him see the truth about this stuff and then watch what happens. I need to get some story, yes, but if you start telling me detail about that, that deal, we're in trouble. We're never going to get out of there like that. I want to cut to the chase as fast as I can, so that I have an opportunity to make you feel uncomfortable as fast as I can, so that we can get on with this stuff. It is a race. Chris and I talk about this stuff all the time. We're talking triage here. You're bleeding all over the place. And our job is to get you to not bleed. We need to get you healthy as quickly as we can. And then if we need to come back around later and circle back and do some more inventory, that's fine. I call them envelope inventories. Just here, take an envelope, flip it over on the backside and write you a little piece of inventory. And it's just as sweet as it can possibly be. Do the other one. But don't get so bogged down in some of this stuff that it takes you forever. And most of y'all recognize that. There's some pushback within the fellowship. People will go, no, if it's less than 5 hours, you didn't do a good job. Or the one that I love is the poor little guys coming out of treatment. They go, if you don't have 700 names on your inventory, you're not doing a good job. Guys, listen, I don't know 700 people. I have a lot more of that on my Facebook thing, but I don't really know them. Okay. Jeez Louise. Come on, man. If you haven't thought of them in years, leave them off there. That's enough of that stuff. Let me tell you something. There's a reason that they called the stuff that separated the men from the boys. Done right. There's nothing sweeter than recognizing that the pain and suffering that you began to see and the ugliness that you began to see can be removed, and you can begin to move towards a man that you never dreamed that you could be, a man that cares about his character, a man that cares about being authentic. And there's nothing cooler than that. Guys, I'm delighted that I have a family. I'm delighted I got a new grandson. I'm delighted that all this stuff happens in my life like that. But if I have to put my finger on it, what I'm more delighted about is that I have a deepening relationship with my Creator that is strong enough that there's nothing in front of me that I can't deal with, that I can't effectively deal with. And because I'm in a position where I can look at it that way, I have an opportunity to affect change, and I can be in the lives of other men, and I can help them. I can alter the course of their life. Sometimes I can save their life, depending on the circumstances like this. But in doing so, their life changes and my life changes. And looking back on a bunch of years doing this kind of stuff, there's nothing I've ever been more grateful for. That there was a Creator there that figured out a way to take a crusty old bastard from Central Texas and use him to do some good. Nothing has meant more to me than that. And that you guys asked me to come do this, you have no idea how grateful I am that I could spend an hour with you this evening. And thank you for letting me do this.